Saram, dear listeners, and welcome to A Matter of Conscience. Today we are not having Outside Inside Deep Inside, but we are having an episode of A Matter of Conscience for a special reason. Today is October 20th, 2016. It was on this day, 70 years ago, that Bhagwan unveiled the mystery surrounding his birth, his life and his mission. He declared to the people around and through them to the entire mankind that he indeed is the Supreme Consciousness embodied in a diminutive and delightful form. It was on this day that Bhagwan candidly announced, "I am no longer your Satya. I am Sai. I have my work. My devotees are calling me." And ever since, this eternal reservoir of energy and empathy, hope and happiness, solace and succor, light and love has nursed and nurtured and ensured that the tiny seed of goodness which is latent within every individual grows into a gigantic tree of love and serenity. And like a perfect teacher, Bhagwan has demonstrated this more by living that principle in every moment of his own life. And the result is this luminescent legacy that will continue to illumine the dark alleys of humanity's collective consciousness, elevating humanity's collective consciousness to a state of absolute sublimity for generations to come. During the 1940s, when a lot of devotees started coming for Bhagwan's darshan, young and old, rich and poor, even Maharajas and rich landlords also came to have a glimpse of Bhagwan. And the press started taking notice of all this. And Swami's elder brother, Seshma Rajugaru, who was not yet aware of Bhagwan's divinity, he began to worry about the impact of the attention that his younger brother was receiving. And he started thinking, will this adoration go to the head of the young Satya? Would he fall a victim to various temptations and all that? And so, very disturbed by the ridicule of the cynics and the skeptics, all those people who could not fathom Bhagwan's divinity, Seshma Raju, as a concerned older brother, he conveyed his anxiety to the 20-year-old Satya, and Bhagwan, in that reply to his brother, that letter that he wrote on May 25th, 1947, he said, "This letter is addressed to all those who are devoted to me." Although the letter was intended for Seshma Rajugaru, it was in fact addressed to, as Bhagwan mentioned in that letter, all those who are devoted to me. And it was a powerful declaration of the purpose of the Sai Avatar. Even more noteworthy is the equanimity and the maturity with which the young Satya addressed his older siblings' concern about the critics. If the truth is determined by its ability to stand the test of time, then the words of the 20-year-old Satya expressed in this letter are as valid today as they were several decades ago, reflecting his unshakable resolve to fulfill his mission. And to date, Bhagwan continues to pour nothing but pure love, even upon those who judge him harshly. So in that letter, Bhagwan says, "I have a task to foster all mankind and fill people's lives with ananda. I have a vow to lead all who stray away from the straight path into goodness again and save them. I am attached to a work that I love to remove the suffering of the poor and grant them what they lack. I have a reason to be proud, for I rescue all who worship and adore me. I have a definition of devotion. I expect that those devoted to me treat joy and grief, gain and loss with equal fortitude. I will never give up those who attach themselves to me. When I am thus engaged in my beneficial task, how can my name be ever tarnished?" "As you apprehend," Bhagwan questions his older brother, "I would advise you not to heed to such absurd talk. Mahatmas do not acquire greatness through someone calling them so. They do not become small just because some call them small." And Bhagwan continues, "I will not give up my mission nor my determination. I shall carry them out. I treat with equanimity the honor or dishonor that may result. Internally, I am totally unconcerned. I act but solely in the outer world. If I talk and move about, it is entirely for the sake of the external world and for making people realize the advent of divinity. Other than this, I have no concern with anything. I don't belong to any place. I am not attached to any name. I have no mine or thine. I respond to whatever name you might use. I go wherever I am needed or called. For me, the world is something afar and apart. I act and move only for the sake of mankind. No one can comprehend my glory, whoever it may be, whatever be the method of inquiry, and no matter how long the attempt. You will yourself see the full glory unfolding in the coming years. Devotees must have patience and forbearance. I am not concerned, nor am I anxious that these facts should be made known. I have no need to write these words. I wrote them because I felt that you will be pained if I do not reply. Yours, Baba. So this is how Bhagwan, in that letter to his brother in 1947, made that historic declaration about himself. Every word and every sentence in this letter stand out. And you have the grand proclamations of the mission of the avatar. I have a task to foster all mankind and fill people's lives with ananda. I have a vow to lead all who stray away from the straight path into goodness again and save them. Today, dear listeners, I want to share with you the story of someone who too has experienced this fulfillment of Bhagwan's promise to fill people's life with ananda, who has experienced how Bhagwan has put him into goodness. Someone who in his childhood had strayed away from the straight path, how Swami brought him into goodness and saved him, and continues to fill him with fulfillment and bliss. Mr. Krish Venkatasubramaniam from Chennai, a chartered accountant with close to 3 decades of experience in Indian and multinational companies. He is the CEO of Ananta Consulting Private Limited, and he is a coach for many CEOs today, who has also been a long devotee of Bhagwan. He is going to share today how Bhagwan brought him back into the path of goodness, how he began to listen to the voice of his conscience and experience the consciousness of Bhagwan pervading every second of his life.
Tune into Sai. Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
Sai Ram, and welcome Mr. Krishnan to A Matter of Conscience.
Sai Ram, thank you so much.
Actually, it gives me a lot of pleasure to have you in this program, because way back in 2007, when we had Heart to Heart as a monthly journal, we had started the series called Harnessing the Heart, Living Up to the Challenge of Conscience in Daily Life. And then I remember we worked together for so many months, and we created very beautiful stories of people who are trying to live by values. In today's times, you based in Chennai would go and talk to many people, entrepreneurs, professionals, students, and it was such a very, very meaningful exercise, and it used to fill us with so much of joy and so much of hope that, you know, there are so many people around us whom many times we fail to even notice, but people who have been so steadfast in their values, and you are someone who always believed in it. So today, perhaps you should share your story. When and how did you begin to be so convinced
that living with values is the way to add value to life?
First of all, I'm so very grateful to you and the Radio Sai team, because those series of discussions with people, some of them are Swami's devotees, some of them are indirectly Swami's devotees. It was a revelation for me that there are so many wonderful human beings who demonstrate values, and I think it was sadhana by itself for me. You need an excuse to be in the right environment, so that was one for me. So I am so very grateful for that. Now coming to my life or my story, I'm afraid I don't have such big stories. But personally, I believe that many profound things are actually very simple.
Mm-hmm.
They are actually related to the mundane day-to-day things in which one can demonstrate. That is one. And second, if I have to tell you my story in a very brief manner, even in the spiritual path, I think I'm one of those laziest people. But I have to thank my mother, my earthy mother, as you know, Paramahamsa Yogananda writes in his book. My earthy mother took me to the Divine Mother Sai when I was a child. So I need to tell what made her do that. So I ran away from my home.
Mm-hmm.
Can you guess the age?
When you were a teenager. Were you a rebel child or something?
Yeah, so, but can you guess the age? It's not even teen. So, when I was about four and a half, I ran away from my home.
Oh, 4 and a half. No one runs away from home. Everybody wants to be loved and want to be cared and eat ice creams and chocolates.
I was loved and I was actually pampered. Mm-hmm. But, you know, something made me go in search of the boating which somebody took me the previous day.
Mm-hmm.
So, next day I just ran away from my home. And 1 year later, again I ran away.
To go for boating?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You wanted fun?
I wanted fun. Mm-hmm. So, I just playfully, I just went off without any sense of care or fear. 1 year later, again, I tried to go away from my home in a similar fashion, just in search of something that was
interesting. So, the parents found you after a day or two or something?
No, the same day, after a lot of pain and anguish. So, this is how it started, you know. So, it was a lot of tension for my mother. And when I was about 10, I went to watch a movie without informing my parents.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm giving you these instances from my life so you would know what kind of person I was even when I was about 10. And when I was about 8 years, I had even stolen money from my house.
Oh.
So I used to steal money for those chocolates and things like that. So when I went to that movie without informing my mother, I did not inform even my best friend at that point of time, because I thought that maybe he would inform my mother. You know, you cannot trust those friends. So at the age of 10, I realized I shouldn't inform anybody. I went to the theater near my home. I went in. I was waiting to enjoy the movie. Just a minute to the movie, the person next to me called me and said, you know, somebody's calling you. So I looked towards the door. My mom was standing there.
You can never escape your mother.
And even today, I don't know how she knew that I was there in that cinema hall watching that movie, because I had not told her, I had not told anybody. So she brought me home. She did not punish me,
mm-hmm.
but she felt very sad.
Mm.
So these are the instances, you know, which probably gave a lot of concerns for my mother. Because a mother would think, if this were the behavior of a child, what would the child become when the child becomes a teenager or a young adult? And apart from that, around the same age, I also found a way where I could buy food from the nearby restaurant without paying for it.
Mm-hmm. So you could trick the manager there.
Yeah, and then get food without paying.
So you were quite a thing as a child.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And that's one qualification to be here, you know. So from that, what changed me is the story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's what I'm going to share. So my mom was very concerned. And very near our house, there was a family of Sai devotees. And my mom and that mother were very close. And that lady knew about my mother and our family. I had an elder brother who was a special child.
Okay.
So was ailing. So for more reasons, my mother had a lot of attention at home. So that lady used to tell my mother only one thing. Just believe in Baba, he will take care of your family. That was one thing which she used to frequently tell my mother. My mother hails from Bangalore. So as a child, she grew up in Bangalore. And when she was about 13 or 14, she had the opportunity to garland Swami in her grandfather's house in Bangalore.
Oh, wow.
So that was her background as a child. But after marriage, you know, all that thing stopped. But now there was a reason for my mother to get back to Swami with even more vigor, because there's a reason, you know, her son is all set to go on the wrong path. So she took me to this lady's house. And two of her sons, who were also Balvika's children, were very different from every other child in that area. They wouldn't watch even television. So they had a sense of discipline. One was in the late teens and the other was probably in the early 20s. So the elder one of them is none but Meenakshi Sundaram, who is now handling the Tamil Radio Sai, and his brother Swaminathan. And I'm in touch with them even now, and I'm so very grateful for them, because they were the first people to give me a taste of spirituality. So my mother took me to them, and she said, you know, I'm very concerned about this naughty, mischievous boy with, at this rate, I don't know where he's going to teach. So why don't you teach him some slokas and probably, you know, guide him to the right path. So I used to go to their house, and they, both of them were so very loving. They never used to advise me. They never questioned about what I did. All that they would do is they would teach me some slokas, and they were so very loving to me. And even I noticed that both of them were very different from every other youngster in that area. So that is one. And second, on Thursdays, rain or shine, whatever be the reason, Thursday evening, whoever is at home, one of these brothers would sit and sing bhajans. And in the concrete shelf, I still remember, it is just there before me. Like, I remember all those bad things. I also remember this even more vividly, you know. So in that concrete shelf, one Swami's photo would be there. And even amidst the noise and the chaos, if both of them were there, they would sit together. Or if one of them would be there at home, at that point, they would just sit and sing bhajans every Thursday. That was the next taste of spirituality for me. And I didn't know the word spirituality, or I didn't even think around that. But I experienced something.
You felt it is something remarkable that they follow it with so much of discipline. Every Thursday they do the bhajans.
More than the discipline. Of course, discipline was one of the important factors. But more than that, when I sat there, I was one child who would never sit in one place. But being there, sitting in that place, I felt something that was very, very peaceful. And I didn't feel like running away from that place. I was just sitting there. And today, as a, you know, CEO coach, as a leadership coach, as a chartered accountant, as a very successful person, I remember that one song which used to be sung during those bhajans. That one song, you know, sums up what could happen to a family or what could happen to a child who comes into Swami's fold. So one such song they used to sing was, Jaya Jagadisha Hare, Jaya Govinda Hare. So that was a bhajan.
What was touching about this bhajan to you? It is just names of the Lord, isn't it?
I think, one, it was the devotion with which both these brothers used to sing. Even at that point of time, I used to listen to a lot of film music. I was very interested in music. But none of the music that I listened to in those days impacted me to that extent as the bhajans.
As this bhajan.
Which, yeah.
It goes Aruna, Chala Shiva Om.
Yeah.
It goes to a crescendo. And
yeah, and you know, one important thing is the last line, which is connected to my life. You know, none of my family members, none of the people who would know me and my family would have ever believed that I would even graduate. That was the status of a family. That was the status of my own self at that point of time. Probably if there would have been one person who would have believed, probably it would have been my mother because of her faith in Swami.
Okay.
So that being the case, I would have never ever come up in life in any way. So the last line, Jaya Devi Bharati Vidyadayini Annapurna Mata Om. So that line, very often I sing even today because I remember the journey. And Swami as the...
Swami is the one who gave you Vidya.
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 Absolutely. So I have five.
And Annapurna. Fulfilled all your wishes.
Yes, yes, yes. So that was the first taste of the sense of spirituality around me.
So you were drawn because you were inspired by those two brothers as well as you felt something peaceful within when you went there.
Absolutely. So now when I look back, I can say here were two people who did not give a single advice to me. I remember so many people advising me, but in vain. So I studied in a school which was very strict. They used to punish me, they used to be very strict, but I don't think anything affected me. But one is the love of these two people, and two, I think the way they lived their life, I think that was something very amazing.
In fact, Bhagwan also always mentions this, that if ever you want to do anything to society, you live the life that I want you to live, you know, you be that example, then automatically you will be inspiring so many people. Automatically you will be serving me because you are becoming a messenger of my message. Absolutely. And that is the best tribute that any person who calls himself a Sai devotee can give to Bhagwan. If anyone looking at them can say that, oh, there is something different about this person. There is something else about him, you know. And then he's curious to know what makes this person different. And then he comes to know that, yeah, it is, oh, okay. He has this Sai Baba connection. I think that is a tribute that any Sai devotee can give to Bhagwan. And it's really fantastic how it has happened in your life. You have seen this in real life. And that is what actually has changed you in your life.
Absolutely. So, a child who runs away from home, a child who steals money from his own home, a child who tricks the hotelier to buy food. And this is a kind of child who is brought to the fold of Swami by a mother who has that immense faith on Swami's divinity. And that was a time when they showed a video on Swami's 50th birthday celebrations in our area. And Brother Meenakshi Sundaram informed my mother and invited her. So she took me along there. So I went with her. And she introduced Swami to me as a great Mahan. That's the exact word she used, Mahan.
A great being. A
great being. And so I was waiting there to watch the video. And I saw Swami coming in a helicopter.
Yes.
For the birthday function.
1975.
Yeah.
The helicopter darshan on Bhagwan's 50th birthday.
So he gets down from the helicopter. I asked my mother, so you say he is a Mahan, but why is he flying in a helicopter? And I noticed Swami was also wearing a pair of sandals. So I asked her, so you say Swami is a Mahan, Baba is a Mahan, but he's, you know, getting down in from a helicopter and he's wearing sandals. So what do you say about it? So my mother did not have an answer. She instead said, you know, we never used to question our parents. You are questioning me. So that was not convincing. And like other aspects of my life at that point of time, here I was a kind of rebellion, arrogant, and, you know, not willing to accept. I think I'm basically a skeptical person. So that was a thought I had. So my mother was sad. But the beautiful thing is, Swami started working on my inner being.
Mm-hmm.
So that was when, you know, things started changing. At that point of time, I didn't know anything. Now when I'm looking back, I knew that that was the time things started changing. In fact, I forgot to tell you something. On one instance, my mother got so upset with me. She said, Baba will hold you like the tong that holds a vessel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he will hold you and you can never get out of his grip. So at that point of time, I thought, she was cursing me.
Oh.
So I told her, your Baba cannot, you know, have me in his grip. So don't ever dream of that. So a 10-year-old boy, you know, arguing with his mother. But many years later in Sundaram, I heard Dr. Mohan Kumaresh talking about his experience, and he said, I came into the loving grip of Swami. So that is when I could recollect that, and I realized that it was actually a blessing from a mother and not a curse. And the best thing to have happened in my life is, coming into the loving grip of Swami. Wow. And my mother used to say, you can never get out of the grip. I definitely agree. Like I said earlier, even in my spiritual sadhana, I think I'm one of those laziest of people. So I cannot take credit for anything that has happened in my life, my evolution or whatever. It has entirely been Swami working on me. In fact, I can give you an analogy. Many, many years back when I went to Mumbai for the first time, my uncle gave me an advice. See, when you travel in the local trains, it's going to be a huge challenge. A lot of crowd getting up and getting down. But I'll tell you a technique. Just go there and stand in the right place. People will just push you in. You don't need to struggle. And even while getting down, do the same thing. You will just get down automatically. I think that is what happened even in my spiritual journey. I was there in the right place. Probably, I shouldn't say I was there in the right place. I think my mother's prayers.
Yeah.
And, Swami had to answer the earnest prayer of a mother. So I think that's the secret. So that started changing things inside me. And I can very clearly say there was a powerful voice in me which started guiding me.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say conscience, it's the voice of the soul, right? So I started listening, or I was made to listen to the voice thanks to Swami having started to work on me. When I was around 8th standard, I took a resolution that I will never ever copy in any exam.
Mm-hmm.
This is important because one, I was a rebellion, I was bold, and I had the capability to do that. And there were occasions where I failed in a subject or two, but even on those occasions, since I had committed to Swami that, I will not copy, from then on, I have not copied in any exam. And like that last line of the song which I mentioned today, when I look back, from a stage where nobody would have ever believed I would even graduate. Today I have 5 qualifications, apart from a graduation, I have 2 post-graduate degree, one in psychology, one in management. I am a chartered accountant and I am a CISA, Certified Information Systems Auditor from the US. This year I am going to get into the British Psychological Society and I am going to become a CPA from Ireland.
Wow.
All this is entirely the gift of Swami for that commitment which I gave as a 8th standard student to him that, look, I will not copy. So, definitely I can tell anybody, once a person takes one step towards Swami and says, look, it's not about my intelligence, it's not about my ability, it's entirely about your grace, and I am willing to travel the path the way you want me. Once that commitment is given, I don't think anybody will have any reason to look back.
Wow.
That I can definitely say.
What is important is we being true to our word. I think we being true to our commitment. I think if we have that one step, which is, it's a very serious step, and it is a promise that you make and you live up to that promise, then the Lord goes to any extent. And I think, as we have seen, we have so many Chinnakathas and other tales that Bhagwan has mentioned where, a thief, he says, okay, I will do one thing right. He goes to a sage and, sage asks, what are your traits? And he says, I cannot stop this, and this is what makes me. Then the sage finally says, okay, give me one thing that you will stop. And he says, okay, from today I will tell the truth. We have that story, and ultimately he becomes the minister.
Correct.
Because of that one word. What is really interesting is how also Bhagwan slowly started working in you, in the sense that, you started going to the Balvikas and you were in an environment where you could listen to your inner voice. And to me, it was definitely the great blessing that the mother conferred on you. It is purely because of mother's prayer that Swami ensured that you came into an environment where your soul can blossom. And often whenever Bhagwan used to speak to students, he used to always say that, your food do, blood do, dud do, everything is the gift from the mother and your father. The parents are what you are made up of is completely because of them. And in your life, you have actually seen that. So how it was after that? You know, now you are at a stage where you started listening to your voice. So even as a teenager, where possibly your life could have taken a different turn, now you became more conscientious. You want to listen to the inner voice. So how was the journey from there on?
Like I said, one thing which I told myself is that I would not copy in any exam for any reason, whatever be the condition in which I am. That was one. The second is that I think there is a huge change in my behavior. Like, for example, there was an instance where somebody gave me a huge amount of cash by mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And I handed over the balance cash. That was a huge amount of cash for me at that point of time. I had all the reason to probably have it myself and use it, but I just gave it back and I felt very happy. I still remember I felt very happy. I did not even feel bad that, oh, look, I have lost an opportunity, considering my past. So these are all some of the changes, but one thing in my experience, though these things have to be unconditional, in my experience, every time it benefits me. The moment you give a commitment to Swami, the moment you live life in a way which will make him happy, I think it eventually benefits. That I have seen. For there are a lot of simple instances that have happened even during my school days, and later even some very important things that have happened. So let me give one instance at school. My friend and I, we watched a cricket match in a room without permission.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the teachers found that, and when he came in, we managed to switch off the television. We were just acting as if we were just sitting there having lunch. But he knew very well that we had done that mistake.
You violated a rule.
Violated the rule, and it was a very, very strict school. So he persuaded us. He said, you know, look, you tell me the truth, you accept the truth, then I'm willing to forgive you. So my friend kept on arguing, but I thought it's always good to accept the truth. Then I accepted the truth. I told him, look, I can speak for myself. I did watch the match and I want to tell you the truth and I'm sorry about it. But what happened was he went back on his word, the teacher. So he escalated and he took me to the vice principal, and then from the vice principal, she escalated it to the principal, and then eventually I was taken to the correspondent of the school, and
both
she was
you.
Both of us. So we were there, and I thought, you know, look, I've actually accepted the truth, so why escalation? And I was actually thinking something is going to happen now, because the correspondent said, I'm going to call your parents and, you know, I'm going to take action. So, but at this point of time, another two students came there with a trophy, and they happily showed the trophy to the correspondent and said, you know, we have won an inter-school competition, so here is a trophy. And that changed her perspective, and after blessing them and all that, she looked at us, especially me, because she knew me right from my probably three and a half years time. So she looked at me and said, this is how children have to be, this is how students have to be, they have to bring laurels to the school, what is it you are doing? And now she was filled with love. She was looking at me like a good mother and a loving mother. She said, children have to be good and you are wasting time watching cricket. Is this why your parents are sending you? And that was one moment where I remember very vividly, I shed tears.
Mm-hmm.
Not when somebody was very strict to me, but here is a motherly figure who is showing her genuine love to me. But the most important thing here is, things may get escalated, but I think in my experience, every time you are saved from misery, when you admit the truth.
Yes.
Or when you just go on the right path, and instead of defending yourself, telling one lie after the other. It could be a small incident, but for a child, for a school-going boy, I think that was a great revelation. It's not that every time I'm expecting something back, but every time I do something to Swami as an offering. See, one thing when I say offering, Swami is happier when we offer something from our behavioral perspective.
Yes.
Not something material like a flower or, you know, fruit offered
which is
as an
outside, which is his creation.
And I often recite this, Ada Yedevya Kusumani Manoharani Shripada Pujana Vidhim. So I always consider myself as a flower, one. And two, it is my behavior, what I think and how I behave. It's a continuous journey.
Yes.
It's a continuous sadhana. It's not that I've reached a thing. Yes. But every time I chanted, I always felt that it is this flower that you need to offer to Swami.
When you do in the morning Suprabhatam prayer,
So, I think that was the beginning of this fantastic journey. And the most interesting thing is, none of these things happened out of me fearing something. All these things were not driven by fear, either for God or for some authority, because at that point of time, I had no fear. So, it was more out of love. And not out of my love, it was Swami's love, which I started experiencing. But at that point of time, I did not know that it was Swami's love. But today I know that, you know, it has been so very consistent. So now I am 50 plus. So for the last 40 years, 40 years of consistent love, it's not my imagination. It's not a coincidence. It's something which is real. Because one after the other, one after the other, I have been experiencing that from Swami.
Amazing. It's really beautiful. One thing is, unconditional love is something that we can never ever say that we have understood when it comes to Swami. Love itself is, as I say, it's the finest emotion of the universe. And we can never ever say that we have understood love. We can never ever fathom unconditional love. And I think as you live with Bhagavan, as you more and more think about Him, and as you reflect more on your life, you keep discovering how deep His love has been for us. I think that is what also slowly, as that understanding grows in us, that is what refines us further and further. I think that's what also reiterates everything that He wants us to follow. And you become more and more convinced, and you have more courage to follow, isn't it? So, did it happen like that in your life as you moved on from your teenage years to now into the professional world? And now there are different set of challenges. You're now working with so many people in reputed organizations. So how easy or difficult was it now to follow values?
See, like I said, for me, it's more like boarding a bus that takes you to the right destination. So you cannot take credit for anything. It was your mother who helped you board that bus. And inside the bus, you are just, you know, living a very peaceful, luxurious life. So I would say in my case, it's more of that. But whether it is easy or difficult, I would say it's more tilted to the easy thing, because the moment you realize that it's always long term and not short term. So most of the people think short term, and that is when, you know, things go wrong for them. So I think in the long term, all these things, it's like investment. So even somebody who says, look, you know, I'm not interested in spirituality. Look, I want something in return. I think it makes sense that you go the right path, because in the long run, these are the things which will help you to have a peaceful sleep.
Yes.
And you won't know what will boomerang.
Yes.
It makes sense. It makes absolute sense. But in my case, I have not thought of logic. In my case, it has always been just that, you know, I boarded the bus called Bhagwan Sri Sathya Sai. And people around me, I have always prayed to Swami, look, you know, let me be a dog amongst lions. So let it be the Sundaram Bhajan group. Let it be the Sai organization. Let it be Radio Sai. I think my blessing is that I have always been amidst spiritual people, that it has not been difficult for me. And for a child who went on the wrong path, the teen would have been very bad. So many teenagers around the world, they go entirely on the wrong path. Anything could have, I would have become a criminal in any way. But instead, you know, I can proudly say I'm an asset to my society wherever I live. And that's entirely because of Swami's grace. So no credit to me. I've not worked hard. I remember in one of the divine discourses in Whitefield, I heard Swami say, what is sadhana? Sadhana is nothing but changing from bad to good. And that really made a huge impact on me. I would always remember that sadhana is not doing puja, not telling some mantra. You cannot escape. And like I said, when Swami came into my life, I included Swami as one amongst the many gods whom I already knew. But then later I realized, you know, He was not the same. So you could not do something and get away. So then I realized that, okay, It's not that Swami can be pleased by offering flowers, fruits and all that. So you have to change. So from then till now, it has always been a journey where the only challenge, since you ask easy or difficult, the only challenge is living up to the standard of Swami.
Mm-hmm.
On one side, it is always easy to live outside of this circle, getting down from the bus. There are no expectations, you don't need to answer, but you are taking a huge risk because this bus is safe. You are bound to reach the destination. Not only the destination, you are bound to enjoy this journey. So why get down from the bus? So there is an expectation. If you have to be in the bus, so your standards are high. Sometimes you would fail, sometimes you would succeed. But it makes sense to remain seated inside the bus and not get on because the expectations are high. Maybe a couple of instances from my professional life. Again, from a personal perspective, I was in Maldives for about 5-6 years. Towards the end of it, my wife and I, we were missing the Sai activities. There weren't much of Swami's activities in that country. Maldives is a very beautiful place, and people who can enjoy the beaches, enjoy the salary that you get in US dollars, a lot of tax-free salary. People who enjoy that, they may live there, but for us, we were missing Swami's activities, we were missing the Indian culture. So I decided to come back, and after a long time, I was updating my resume. So what I did was, I sat before Swami's photo, I sat down in prayer, I prayed to Swami, look, Swami, I'm going to prepare my resume, which is going to be full of truth. You know, the normal resume is filled with beautiful lies, sometimes exaggeration, sometimes real blatant lies. So that time I consciously prepared a resume, and even after preparing it, I sat before Swami. I challenged myself, is there something which is beautifully untrue? So I removed all that. I said, Swami, here is what I am placing it before you. And to give you a perspective, that was around 2005. Indian economy wasn't booming. It is very difficult for a person to come back to India and get a job. So my colleagues, my professional colleagues and friends, they warned me about that. And they said, I have to come back to India, stay here, attend many interviews, and then that's the only way you get a job. But what I did, I updated my resume, I sent it to just few of my friends. I remember maybe 5 or 6 of. So one of them called me back, sent me a mail saying that there is one opening in Deloitte. And he passed my resume to the person there. And to my surprise, in about 2 days, I know many people who keep searching for a job. Even if it's a professional, it's not that easy to get a job, especially when you come back to India, right? In 2 days' time, I'm getting this email, and things happen so very fast, and I respond to the mail, and this friend of mine, one day he calls me, and he is asking me, do you know the name of your prospective boss?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, what's the name? Okay, I'll give you a hint. It's the name of your God.
Oh.
So I knew what he was meaning, but, I wanted to hear from his own mouth.
His name was Sai Ram?
Yes, absolutely. So I acted as if, I didn't understand. No, I don't understand. He said, Sai Ram. So Sai Ram, he said, is the name of my prospective boss. And that was really, really pleasant for me to hear. The important thing here is I have never told my friend that I am considering Swami as God. I have never told him that.
Mm-hmm.
And he just knows that I pray to Swami. But what prompted him to tell me that here, your future boss name is the name of your God?
Mm-hmm.
So that is again an indirect revelation from Swami that, see, look, you took one step, so I am taking 100 steps. I don't think it is that very easy to settle back, especially at that point of time, 2005. And when I left there were some developments there, and I couldn't get the relieving letter from my employer there in Maldives. So when I came back, some of my friends said, so why don't you cook up a thing and I can get some reference there from Maldives. So instead, what I did was I went to my boss with my God's name. I told him, sir, I have a small constraint. I don't have a relieving letter from my last employer, but I can get you any reference from my earlier employees in India, 2-3 employees. He just looked at me and said, I don't need any reference.
Oh, no relieving letter needed also.
Yeah.
So, no relieving letter. I did not cook up. I had made up my mind not to do that. And there were no confusions in my mind. I just went straight. And I was taking a risk because, at least on paper, I was taking a risk. Because, you know, normally, without that letter, you won't get a job. But for me, you know, all impossible things have been happening. So, but it was not that I was expecting something to happen. I thought it was an easier way just to go and tell, look, I don't have. But I can give you reference from 2-3 employees, past employees from India, but for which he said, no, I don't need any reference. So that is again another revelation that it's always better to stick to the right path, you know. So you manipulate, you tell one lie, one after the other, and you know what happened to many large organizations, you just vanish. Just because, you know, they hung on to the tiger's tail and it keeps going round and round and there's no end to it.
Really amazing. In a sense that, you know, for any outsider, what you did at that point in time was definitely not a smart move. You know, you totally removed everything from your CV that was impressive, quote unquote, you know, which you look impressive. You just stuck to only the facts, and there were a lot of things in the CV which could have made it look really, I mean, there are so many people who are experts in, you know, helping you draft your CVs. So if you look in the worldly way, you are actually not being street smart. But I think if you're size smart, then Swami Absolutely. Will ensure that smart things happen in your life. And that's what happened. You get a job, you get a fantastic boss, and he doesn't need any documents, and you just straight go into the job. Fantastic.
So you want to be on the street, you can be street smart. But I don't want to be there, right? I want to be inside that bus. It's a very luxurious bus, and the chauffeur is, you know who. Yes. So, yeah. So it's always better to be there.
Amazing.
In fact, I've always realized that things which you think from the point of view of the worldly thing. For example, you approach things from a psychology perspective, which is what many corporates do. You know, most of the businesses, they approach from a psychology perspective. For example, in my experience, I've seen most people in the corporate, they cannot be assertive. One, they cannot disagree with respect. They cannot support what is right. They just don't have it. And they come and tell that to me and they ask me for ways to come out of it. And most corporate HRs as well as the coaches, they approach this from a psychology perspective. But I feel that, you know, psychology without the strong foundation of spirituality will not answer this question, will not solve this problem. The moment you base all this based on a strong foundation of spirituality, you realize that you are a spark of the divine one, and you are here with a purpose.
Yes.
And you are not talking to your boss as an ordinary person, you are also somebody. So you're on a mission. So then what happens is you realize that you are important and you learn how to be assertive for the right purpose. So I think this is one major...
I think what happens is, as Bhagavan says, then you have self-confidence. The self-confidence in its truest sense, where it is not the small s, it's the capital S. Because when you believe that you are not that individual with your own limited capabilities, and there is a higher power which will always back you, I think when you have that kind of a courage and that kind of a self-confidence, then, you know, when you're walking on the right path, also you will be assertive. You have that courage to walk because, you know, the force behind you is no ordinary force.
Absolutely.
And the other thing that you mentioned about psychology, I'm only tempted to say that ultimately what will give you the foundation of psychology should be psychology. You know, it's SAI.
Absolutely.
Psychology. Because ultimately what we're trying to say is you got to have that clarity that there is something which is governing and beyond the reach of logic and reason. There is a higher power. As Gandhiji very beautifully said, there is an indefinable power pervading the entire universe. I cannot see it, but I can feel it. Bhagavan says faith is the foundation of spirituality.
In fact, Gandhi calls conscience as the highest court.
Highest court, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
There are so many courts, you know, legally, but he says conscience is your highest court.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think all this training, walking on the path of dharma, walking on the path of righteousness, you have that courage to walk only when you are connected within.
Absolutely.
And that connection happens thanks to Bhagwan, thanks to our upbringing, thanks to perhaps the culture.
You mentioned upbringing, so I want to take this opportunity to pass this message. Wherever you see a child who's misbehaving or showing signs of going to the wrong path, I think the child only requires a good dose of love.
Yes.
This is something where I find this is lacking in many places where, you know, I personally feel punishment will only instill a fear and probably it will prevent somebody from walking onto the wrong path. But you want somebody to walk onto the right path. You want somebody to realize that infinite love, get that self-confidence that you mentioned. I think a good dose of love is required from parents, from teachers, from people around.
Mm.
I think that is a sure shot investment in my opinion.
Yes.
And even today, when I go to different places, people come to me for, you know, parenting counseling. They say, my child is so very naughty. Or sometimes they say, my child could be ADHD because he's overactive.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to tell them, look, the only thing required is one, your love, and two, the divine path.
Okay.
So I think that's
attention one. Deficit disorder.
Yeah.
You're mentioning.
There are so many such cases where children are sometimes diagnosed correctly, sometimes even diagnosed in the wrong way, and it's a rising trend.
Mm.
And parents are very concerned about the hyperactive children or children who are not listening, children who are not willing to go the right path. Okay, the only way is one, the child needs to see people around actually demonstrating what is that right behavior. That is one. And second, lot of love. I don't think there is any limit for love. There is no overdose of love. I think people around, if they love, it's my opinion that no child would lose track of the right path.
Absolutely. Even statistics would prove that, you know, where you have a lot of youngsters who have taken to the wrong path, it is because of a childhood which was not filled with love. It's because of a disturbed childhood. It was because of a very disrupted childhood. And we have seen that in so many societies. And when you mentioned about how love alone can set things right, two thoughts that come to me. One thing is, of course, Bhagwan, while defining dharma, also said, what is dharma? It is love in action is dharma. As love in speech is truth, you know, love in action is dharma. And the second thing is, this is what we saw in Bhagwan's life also, isn't it?
True.
How did he reform all these people? You know, there are all kinds of people with various shades and degrees of imperfections, with their own ideas and idiosyncrasies and egos and, you know, tendencies nowhere in line with being a follower of Baba, you know. But how did Bhagwan transform so many and continues to do? And it is just this love, isn't it?
Absolutely.
That's how we also started. This unconditional love is what we saw in Bhagwan. And that is what perhaps each one of us should practice in our own little ways.
Absolutely. And, you know, Swami has shown such unconditional love to me. And when I ask myself, did I deserve it? Have I done something which I know that, you know, Swami had to give it? I don't see anything in me, so I can demand or I can say I deserve it. But Swami has been so extremely loving to me. Maybe I can share one or two instances.
Sure. I think we'll end with that.
I have not shared this with anybody outside my family. I think this is an occasion where I can share.
Wonderful.
When I joined the Sundaram Bhajan group many years back, I joined as a mic assistant. So I had to help the mics group to carry the mic or lay the wires and all that. And this was especially just before Swami's visit where they require more hands. So between Sundaram and Abbotsbury, the huge hall in the heart of Chennai, so that is where Swami would give his public discourses. So what we do is we'll go lay the wire, arrange the mics and check the public address system, and after that I had no work. So the technical people would take care of that. So I just had to sit and enjoy Swami's darshan. So Swami would enter the Abbotsbury hall using the first door which was near Swami's stage. So I used to sit just behind Swami's stage alone after the things were set right. So Swami would enter the hall. And invariably a devotee would give a rose to Swami as he enters the hall, and Swami would have the rose for some time. Sometimes he would give that flower to a devotee sitting there. One of those days when Swami entered, a devotee gave him a very beautiful rose and Swami had it, and suddenly from nowhere The thought came to my mind, what if Swami gives that rose to me?
Okay.
There was absolutely no logic or no reason why Swami would give that to me, a boy who is sitting behind the stage after doing the mic's work. There's no absolute logic. So Swami was looking towards the few devotees who were sitting just near the stage. So I thought maybe one of them would be getting the rose. And then Swami slightly turned away, now looked towards the gents bhajan group. And now I thought maybe one of the gents bhajan group member would get the rose. So my hope was now, going down and down because Swami is now moving away from me. And Swami slowly moves away from me and in the opposite direction goes towards the Mahila side. So now my heart beats, okay, now my chance is gone. Somebody from the Mahila side is going to get that rose. So when that happened, my shoulders drooped. And then now, as I was sitting down to strain to look at Swami, now I drooped my shoulders, relaxed and just sat down. So just waiting to see whom Swami is going to give that flower.
Anyway, he's not going to come.
He's facing entirely the opposite direction. He's moved away from me. And all of a sudden, Swami turns roundabout.
Mm-hmm.
He looks at me, smiling.
Oh.
And throws a flower to somebody else.
Oh. He looks at you, smiles, but he throws a flower to someone
else. Yes.
Wow. He gives you the flower of his smile.
Yes. So of the thousands of people who are sitting there, why should Swami turn about, look at me, smile, and that smile, I still remember it was a very, very mischievous smile.
Mm. You've been very mischievous in your childhood and Bhagwan was now playing mischief with you.
Yeah. So here it's the only difference is divine mischief, right? So till now, that would have happened in 89, 90. I don't remember the exact years. Around that time and Swami used to visit Abbotsbury there. So when I look back, I ask, what did I do to deserve this from Swami? Mm. Even if Swami would have given me the flower, I wouldn't have been so much happier.
Yeah. The way he did it is amazing.
So who else will know that here is a boy who is hoping that Swami would give him a rose? Who else will know? And why should Swami do that to me? So why, from my perspective, from Swami's perspective, it's just love. It's unconditional love. From my perspective, I ask myself, so what did I do? So maybe there is something more I need to do. Sometime in the future, maybe I can tell him, look Swami, I have done something in return. Till now, I have not done anything. Probably the continuous sadhana and probably living a life, like he says, your life is my message. That's what Swami changed it from his earlier, my life is my message. Later he started saying, your life is my message. And in fact, when I say this, I remember I used to work for one of the leading newspaper business and I used to work in the corporate office. There was a trend there where people would indulge in loose talk and sometimes or many times it used to be vulgar as well. But whenever there was a discussion, they look towards me and say, sir, 2 minutes, can you be outside?
Oh, wow.
I think that was not a conscious effort from my side. I think Swami readied me for that. And I think that was a respect I carried there. That was my first job. I was in my mid-20s. Right? And I was not that very assertive. I was not very senior. But somewhere people knew that, okay, this guy doesn't like it.
So you somehow people could feel an aura around you, an aura which radiated goodness and piousness. And I think that is...
Otherwise, I was quite normal. I used to mingle with everybody. I used to have lunch with people. Except that whenever they crossed the boundary, especially when it was a vulgar talk, I'd always not shown any interest. It's not that I am perfect. Like I said, the easiest thing is to stay away from these things.
And they had a lot of respect for you.
Absolutely. Yes. And I had never shown my anger on any of them. All that I used to do is move away. If at all. But in most cases, they would just say, Krishnan sir, there's 2 minutes. This thing you will not like what we're going to talk. So I just remember now, as I was saying, your life is my message.
Wow. Wonderful.
Today, I do consulting, training programs and coaching, leadership coaching for, corporations. Sometimes what happens is, again, I follow certain practices which a normal business wouldn't follow. For instance, there was one occasion where they had arranged for 2 batches of programs in the same hotel. They spent a lot of money on that. And I found that in the case of both these batches, very less number of people had come. So I called up their corporate office. I called up and said, look, you know, I see that there are very less number of people in both these batches and you're spending double the money. So why not we combine both so that, you know, you could save money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my team member who was there and was about to do the other program, she was very upset. You know, she asked me, why should you call the client?
I mean, you're getting actually more money. You're getting double the money.
Yeah. And why should, in fact, before I called the Mumbai office, I told her, look, you know, I'm going to do this, but you will be doing the program. You will not lose any revenue from this. I'll insure this. I told her and then I had called the Mumbai office, but you know, she was very upset and she said, this is not how you do, no, why
should not how you
call
do business.
Yeah. So why should you call them?
Yeah.
But when I called the corporate office there, you know, they were asking me, are you sure? Are you sure that, you know, are you okay if you're going to cancel one thing? I said, yeah, perfectly fine. So here I would say that here conscience manifested in terms of gratitude. Yes. Because they were giving me...
Yes, opportunity.
Opportunity. And this opportunity is to actually work with people.
Hmm.
And, you know, even if it's a corporate program, people come there with a lot of problems.
Hmm.
They're struggling with life. They're struggling with so many problems around them, with family, and they're really struggling. So even if it's a corporate titled program, I see that as an opportunity to work with them, you know, give them hope, give them faith, give them certain best practices. And the interesting thing here is I would smile to myself. Sometimes I would say, I would give them a quote. You need not oblige, but speak obligingly. I see them writing, taking that down. I said, where from you got it? So who said this? I said, Chancellor of Satya Sai University. So they would take notes. Sometimes I feel, oh my God, Swami has, you know, given all fantastic things,
yes,
but he has given it in a very simple manner that sometimes we may take it for granted.
Mm.
But over the years, I have realized that, you know, you connect all the simple things that Swami said, it can be connected to customer centricity, which a corporate is doing. So all that has already been told by Swami, but in a very, very simple manner. And the analogies, the metaphors that Swami uses in his talk, they're all so very, very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, everything that needs to be said about how to be happy in life.
Absolutely.
And make life meaningful. Whether you're in a corporate world, whether you're in a social sphere, whether you're doing marketing, finance, whatever it is. I think everything that needs to be said is already said by Bhagwan. All you have to do is read his teachings and try to practice at least one thing. And I think then automatically we will see our understanding becoming larger and more wholesome and holistic. And then once you take that step, as it has happened in your life, we will see him guiding our life. And that has been your journey too. There are no more tests in life. I think everything is only a testimony of his love.
Absolutely.
Ultimately in life.
Correct.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, sir, for taking your time and for this beautiful session of Matter of Conscience. And I hope we'll work together in future episodes to share more such stories to people everywhere who are trying to live a life where they can proudly tell Bhagwan, Swami, our life is your message. Thank you very much.
And this is the best thing to happen in my life. And I am so very grateful to Swami. Thank you so much, brother. Sai Ram.
Sai Ram. So that was Mr. Krish Venkatasubramaniam, CEO of Ananta Consulting Private Limited, based in Chennai. And listening to his experience, perhaps it helped us to think, one, yes, how Bhagwan is fulfilling the promise that he made when he answered the questions of his brother, his anxieties, the anxieties of Seshma Raju Garu, when he said that, I'm here to lead all who stray away from the straight path into goodness and save them. That how Bhagwan is doing that and how we need to take that one step. They say wisdom is knowing the right path to take, and integrity is taking it. One thing is to know, and the second thing is to take it. In the Mahabharata, Duryodhana knew what is right, but he could not take it. But we have Swami with us to give us the strength, to give us that courage. So let us have that boldness to walk
on the path Bhagwan wants us and make all the difference. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference, wrote Robert Frost. And we have to take this road less traveled by and make it the road which is most traveled by, and that is how we'll make most difference to the world. And as we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. And how do we let our light shine? They say, and still after all this time, the sun has never said to the earth, you owe me. Look what happens with a love like that. It lights up the sky. So all we need to do is to have a love like that, like the sun, who after all these years of serving each one of us on Mother Earth never said, you owe it to me. We need to have a love like that, which can just give and just be happy that it is giving. Then we light up the sky, the earth. We light up everything in all the worlds. Let us walk on this path. Let us live up to the challenge of conscience in our daily life and make Bhagwan proud. Even as He fills our lives with Ananda, let us strive to give Him Ananda through our thoughts, our acts, and our deeds. Dear listeners, thank you so much for being with us all this day through this beautiful Thursday. If you have any queries or comments, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. I'm Team Leader Sai's Bishu. As we draw the curtains on this beautiful Avatar Declaration Day Thursday, I thank each one of you for being with us on this beautiful journey, and place my humble salutations at His lotus feet for everything He means to us and everything He is to us. Thank you so much. Sadam.